it, make it, do it. Makes us honor, better, faster, stronger.
Campbell on second down and 5.5. Looks right, comes back to the left, going long for Gordon. He's out there, and he caught the ball at the 20, at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
Unbelievable catch, unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap, Dalton back, looking near side, throws it, picked off, and an open run. It's Joe Hayden, and he's in, touchdown!
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagora.
Happy Wednesday, Nathan Zagora, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Today, joined by special guest host in the first hour, Mr. Kevin Jones.
I am pretty special, right, Nathan?
You are very special.
We get an hour today, I'm pumped.
Yeah,
our first
absolutely.
Co-hosting job ever, so I'm happy to be here.
Well, dude, we're happy to have you. And for those of you who don't know, Kevin is the new staff writer at ClevelandBrowns.com. He's written a bunch of great pieces, including one that's gotten a lot of pub about Mike Pettine Sr. as the godfather of the coaching staff here with the Cleveland Browns. And, Kevin, before we get into today's show, which is going to have a little bit of Manziel mania, given that he's reported to be in the building today for his official visit with the Cleveland Browns, why don't you give people a little background about how you came here. Let them know, who is Kevin Jones? And welcome to the Browns, bro.
I got lucky in D.C. I couldn't find a job for a while. I landed on my feet at CBS. I was a reporter, producer, blogger, kind of like a hybrid role, kind of like a Cordell Stewart. I was slash.
There you go.
Did a little bit of everything there, and it was perfect because my rookie season in the media industry was the same as RG3's, was the same as Bryce Harper's. So I came in with them. There was a lot of excitement in D.C. You know, Twitter was kind of becoming big then. People were online a lot. Blogging was becoming big in D.C., started making my name for myself there. What really happened was when RG3 hurt his knee, I did a stakeout and at Redskins Park, and that kind of blew up. That kind of got my name out there, and here I am now in Cleveland.
And welcome. We're glad to have you here. And when you talk about coming here and working as a staff writer, what are your favorite articles that you've written so far for ClevelandBrowns.com, which you people can check out right now at the newly redesigned ClevelandBrowns.com?
Let's talk about the one I wrote today about four under-the-radar players, guys that no one are talking about, that you got a new coaching staff in here. They might get a chance. Deion Lewis at running back.
Sure, coming back. And you didn't get the opportunity to see him in training camp last year, but he was a highlight film in training camp, breaking ankles, a guy that you could see kind of in that Roy Helu mold from Washington as the pass-catching complement to Ben Tate.
Very shifty. That's what
yes.
I like about him because
very shifty.
Tate's a bruiser. He's going to run over you. He's a change of pace guy. I like what I see. He's only 23. He's been in the league 4 years. Got my eye on him. Tight end, we've talked about Marquise Gray a little bit, former
yep.
quarterback at Minnesota. He's a big boy. If you look at him, meet him for the first time, you think, is he a defensive end? Is he a linebacker? Backing up Jordan Cameron in a two tight end set here, I could see him doing some things.
And he's a guy that I would say, you look at the tight ends on the roster. You got Cameron, you got Gary Barnage, Jim Dre, Marquise Gray. Dre and Barnage can be effective receivers, but really I think they're primarily here to block. Marquise Gray, with his athletic pedigree, could be the guy that they teach to be that move joker tight end and could be a factor in the passing game this year.
In the red zone, too.
Absolutely. Big guy. Big guy. Big target.
A guy I circled, a lot of people were kind of shaking their head a little bit, Billy Winn.
I like Billy Winn.
I like him. I like his personality a lot. He's a big guy in the locker room. People respect him. What I like about him is his pass rushing ability. If you look at Pettine's 3-4 defense with the Bills, he, you know, some 3-4s, you have the outside linebackers coming in as rushers. Kyle Williams, the defensive end for the Bills, he had 10.5 sacks last year. There's going to be a defensive end for the Browns that piles up 10 sacks. We're thinking it's going to be Desmond Bryant, but there could be a guy to emerge. Billy Winn could be on the field a lot for third downs. Just keep your eye on him as phase two of the workouts pick up. He's hungry. It's his third year from Boise State, so I've got my eye on him.
Well, back when they were talking about potentially letting Ataba Rubin go, which turned out to be nothing more than pure speculation, one of the reasons that you could see on paper that they could make a move like that was the great play of Billy Winn and John Hughes as well on that defensive line, two young players who were very good. And we look at Mike Pettine's defense last year in Buffalo. Anthony Weaver was the defensive line coach. He has followed him here, and he helped get that defensive line to the point where multiple guys had double-digit sacks, and they played the best that they had at any point in their career when you're looking at Mario Williams, Kyle Williams, of course, Marcell Dareus as well. So I think it's a good fit. I like Billy Winn. Great personality and a guy who certainly has a lot of athletic ability to back it up.
Back to that Bills defense, 57 sacks we always talk about. That's a franchise record.
And second in the league, yes.
You think about Bruce Smith and some of those defenses that Vic Carucci covered in the early 90s,
yeah.
And they're still setting records. So, you know, the bar is set high here. There's going to be those guys, the Deion Lewis's, the Billy Winns, the Marquise Gray, with a new coaching staff. They have a clean slate. They have a chance to kind of emerge. So, you know, it's April. It's May, becoming May. You got to keep your eye on some of these guys that could emerge.
And that Godfather article you wrote about Mike Pettine Sr., which I know has gotten a lot of hits and had that great picture with it. I've seen posters now made of that I know have been distributed to coaches in that article.
I got to give a shout-out to Mario, our intern. I put that together with him. He sort of did the fine-tuning on Photoshop. But it is pretty cool, you know, working for a team now, not working for CBS, where – I'm writing articles. They're reading everything I write. So that part of this job is really cool to me. And to see that poster in coaches' offices, it's humbling.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Well, you made quite a splash in the early going. And speaking of a splash, many people are hoping the Browns do that on May 8th at pick number 4 with Johnny Manziel. And all the reports, all the rumors out there have Johnny Manziel in Berea today for his official visit with the Cleveland Browns. We know that he was reported to have worked out with the team this past weekend down in College Station, Texas A&M. A lot of people like Johnny Manziel, and today is the day, and I know we're just over 2 weeks away from the draft, 15 days. Finally, we can hopefully get there sooner rather than later, but today we're going to spend a lot of time on Johnny Manziel, a lot of time on Johnny football, and there seems to be a growing consensus now that he will be on the board for the Cleveland Browns when they pick at number 4. So my question to you, the audience today, and we're going to talk, give you our opinions on this as well as it relates to Johnny Manziel, is this. You're Ray Farmer. What does Johnny Manziel have to show you either in his workout this past weekend or today in his meetings that would compel you to take him at number 4, that would force you? What would you have to see that the tape didn't show? Because we know about the highs on the tape. We know about the lows on the tape. We know about the inconsistency, the erratic play, the lack of structure in many of the things he did. What would he have to show you and or be able to tell you that would force you to take him at number 4? I know a question that I would have for him. And what would it be a question you'd want to ask Johnny Manziel that would help convince you to take him? And then finally, what would be your number one selling point to Johnny Manziel about the city of Cleveland, since we're all Clevelanders here? What would you tell John Football about coming to the city of Cleveland here?
Nathan, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
If Johnny Manziel had Teddy Bridgewater's personality, quiet, squeaky clean, would he be an automatic top 5 slam dunk pick?
That has nothing to do with for me. Nothing. I love Johnny Football's personality. Johnny Football, I don't see his personality as a detriment in any way, because to be a quarterback, and this is going back to quote the great Bill Walsh, you have to be the most competitive person on the field. And I believe Johnny Football is competitive and will want to win and want to lead this team. Off the field stuff doesn't bother me. I think that's kind of par for the course in today's day and age. But and you rein him in, you say, listen, you got to be able to be a part of a team. I think he'll do that. I think he will want to earn his teammates' respect. His personality doesn't matter to me. What matters to me about Johnny Football is that you have to play from the pocket in the NFL. Does his improvisational skill translate in the National Football League? Does his body hold up in the National Football League? Those are the questions that I have.
I agree. I mean, those are questions. But if you look at Russell Wilson, do some of those questions kind of go away? If you look at Colin Kaepernick, without his scrambling
improvisation. Yes, there you go. I'll help you out. No problem. But I think they're different, though, because Johnny Football, and this is the difference to me, Russell Wilson, and I think they're two different types of players. Russell Wilson plays in a system. He does what he is asked to do, and when it is necessary for him to buy time or make plays with his legs, he does that. He's judicious about it. But when he's in the pocket and he's given a play and this is his primary read, this is his secondary read, if his primary read's open, he's throwing that football. Colin Kaepernick is also a significantly bigger guy. Colin Kaepernick's over 230 pounds. He is a big guy. He is a load to bring down. And Wilson and Kaepernick, although Kaepernick at times will take hits, but to a great extent for even a guy as big as he is, slides when he gets out there, gets out of bounds, doesn't take defenders on. Johnny Football, and this is what if I was going to ask him one question, if I sat down with him and I said, John, you answer this question to me and help me understand your thought process, and we could go through specific plays on tape. Here you are in the pocket, which is what I want to see when evaluating you. Here's your number one read. You're looking right at him. He's wide open, and you don't throw the ball. why are you not throwing the ball?
I think that's stuff that Kyle Shanahan can coach him on. And my argument here to pick Johnny Manziel is that...
So you're all in. Right now, if he's there for you, you take Johnny Manziel.
I think you have to, because if he goes to Minnesota or Tennessee or Arizona and becomes a superstar, this town is going to be heartsick. There's going to be people, not burning jerseys LeBron style, but there's going to be people saying, I cannot believe you looked at a star in the eye and said, you know what, we don't need a quarterback. This team needs a young quarterback to build on, and I think he is the guy. I think fans in this town are scared of his personality. I know you're not. I know I'm not. I think there's fans here who are scared that he'll be bigger than the team, and that is the case in Washington with RG3. It's the case, with Peyton Manning and some other quarterbacks who have earned that, but he is worth the risk in my mind. If he's there at 26, I'll dye my my hair orange if he's there at 26. He's not going to be.
For sure. He is not going to be. I totally agree with that. He's not going to be. But to me, worrying about what he does somewhere else shouldn't, for me, dictate what I do. I got to go off my draft board. And if I have Johnny Manziel, and if Ray Farmer has Johnny Manziel as his top quarterback, and that's the guy that he wants, then you take him at number four. There's no question about it. But if he's not, you don't reach for that position. You can trade back, as we have talked about, maybe moving down into the 8 to 10 range, picking up another second, maybe another third, and then maybe that's a more palatable spot to take that quarterback for the value. But if you believe a quarterback's the guy, you take him. If Ray Farmer believes that Johnny Football's the guy, you take him. But to me, it's about being able to play in structure. Can he do that? Because he's not going to survive. Did you watch the Gruden quarterback camp?
Yeah.
Okay. And there was a part that I go back to it over and over again. When he got hurt and he missed practice and he's not on the field and he was ineffective against LSU and Missouri, I need you on the football field. I need Johnny Manziel to be on the football field. And I don't know if he can rein in those instincts. And I also don't know if he's the kind of guy that is comfortable mentally playing in structure. Because I think the answer when I say, why'd you look at your number one read and not throw the ball? I could make a bigger play if I held on to the football. That gets you killed, gets coordinators fired, and coaches fired in the National Football League.
Right. He needs to be coached, and I agree with that. I think the RG3 situation from two standpoints is going to be huge here. The way he got hurt and came back from recovery, I think that is in quarterbacks' minds when they take off. I don't want to be RG3. I don't want to be in that situation where I'm out for a year. Kyle Shanahan knows how to handle a quarterback with that kind of scrambling ability. I think that's going to be big if they do consider drafting him. He's just.
So what are your what are your favorite things about Johnny Manziel? Tell me why to draft him, not why you don't pass on him. Tell me why you do draft him.
He easily has the best arm in the draft to me. Bortles has a.
I think of the top four, he's the best pure thrower. I'll agree with you.
And on the deep ball too, with Josh Gordon
most accurate. Yep.
Having a reliable guy, unlike Jason Campbell, unlike Whedon, having a guy that's going to get the ball there, because Gordon can burn any DB in the league, as we saw last year. That's how you score in this league. You throw the ball deep. Manziel, I mean, the scrambling ability too. I know we talked about Russell Wilson and Kaepernick. I'm not going to draft a pocket passer. I don't think
who, that of the top of Bortles, Bridgewater, and Manziel, do you define any of them as just pure pocket passers?
Bridgewater for sure. He doesn't.
But he can run.
He had less than 100 yards rushing this year. He doesn't want to. Right. I know he's athletic enough too, but he's
for
not
sure.
going to. He's going to throw the ball away. I want my quarterback to have legs in this day and age of the NFL. I think that's important. If you're going to spend a first round pick on a quarterback, I think it should be a guy who's dynamic enough to make plays. And what he did against Alabama twice, I know SEC defenses, it's not the NFL, but he did it twice. He did it on the road his freshman year, and he did it in Texas A&M last year, putting up that amount of points on that caliber of a defense. That sticks out to me. He has a lot of work to do. I wouldn't call him a project, but like I said, if he goes to another team, I really think he's going to pan out. I can't see him being a bust at all.
So you think there's no bust potential with Johnny Manziel?
I think that he'll be in the league for several years. Whether he's a Pro Bowler or whether he's, Jeff Garcia, kind of a fringe quarterback you can use down the line, we'll see. But I really think he's not going to be like Blaine Gabbert. He's not going to be traded after a couple years.
No. When I see Johnny Manziel, I see a guy who easily could be the best quarterback in this class and who easily could get an entire front office, coaching staff, et cetera, fired after a short stint because he's not on the field and he's not following the game plan and he's improvising.
That's a hard word to say.
Improvising just a little bit too much. All right, we've got Manziel Mania. Mike is on the phone talking about John Football. What's up, Mike?
I don't think I'm taking any quarterback at a number four.
And I think that's where a lot of people are at, and I think that's where – I think that's really – I like Teddy Bridgewater, but I think reaching for that position in a draft where pretty much everybody's board – and this has kind of come out from a lot of people on the NFL. The top four guys on everybody's board in varying orders are Clowney, Mack, Robinson, and Watkins, and then Jake Matthews. Those are the top five guys on pretty much everybody's board. So is it about reaching for that quarterback position? What would you like to do it for? And is there anything that Johnny Manziel could do in your mind in his workout or in his visit to the Browns today that would make you feel more comfortable about taking him at four?
No, not at all. You got Cameron, you got Jordan or Gordon, and Watkins would be sitting pretty there. And then
and who's going to throw the ball to him? I mean, I love Brian Hoyer, but who is going to take this team to the next level?
Hoyer might. But even if we say Hoyer isn't the guy, I like Garoppolo, and I think you if you're going to take a quarterback, I think there's risk reward with him. Hopefully he'll last in the second round, but I think we can get him at the number 26.
Garoppolo's an interesting guy. I have a problem. I feel like he sees phantom pressure in the pocket a lot of times and goes into what I actually read. Matt Waldman, whose take I respect quite a bit, calls it the standing fetal position at times. I'm not so sure about Garoppolo. The guy to me that if you're waiting on a quarterback and you're not taking one of the elite guys or quote-unquote elite guys, the big four, it's Aaron Murray. I love Aaron Murray. I think Aaron Murray can do everything you need a quarterback to do to win in today's National Football League.
If he doesn't tear his ACL, he might be a second-round pick right now.
Oh, yeah, and if he's 6'3", he's the number one pick in the draft. I think that there's I don't think there's any doubt about that with a guy like Aaron Murray. And I think if Teddy Bridgewater had the body, that people would all of a sudden of course he's the number one pick in the draft because the way he plays the game at the quarterback position. We're going to talk more about Johnny Manziel. What does he need to do, and what is the reason that would compel you to pick him? And I want you to think about this more, Kevin, because to me, if you're picking somebody fourth in the draft, it can't be because of what he could do somewhere else. It's got to be because you love him, that there is no doubt in your mind, the conviction that you love this man.
I do.
John Football. You love him. I want more articulation of that love. All right, we'll be back with more here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.